the bartender last night. I know that a number of you were, maybe a majority, were pillars of the hospitality suite, and yet you all look fresh and alert, and I don't feel quite that way myself. I have some announcements here. I'm under direct orders to give, and I always follow my orders. Now, first of all, if there's anyone here who has not registered, it's all right. You know, we won't send for the bouncers or anything, but we do prefer that immediately after this session you do register. So if you haven't done so, please go out. There's a registration table, and do so. Now, speaking of tables, here's an early morning IQ test. Can everybody point that direction? Come on, let's see. Everybody point that direction. Okay. Now, in that room right over there, on the other side of that wall, but you have to go out and around to get to it, there's a lot of literature. We don't have our usual setup. Normally, we have literature tables outside the meeting room. Today, the literature tables are over there in what they call the, whatever it is, Club Georgian Club and something else. And there really is some good stuff. I just went over there and checked it out myself and picked up some pieces, and it's worth your time to walk over there and take a look at that. Let's see. She says it's good to announce the time and place of the next session. Well, the place is here, so that part's easy. And the time will be at 10:45, which is about 15 minutes after the official ending of this one, depending on how lively the floor discussion is for this particular meeting. And one other convention that I'd like you to follow, please. It won't become germane until we really finish the official presentations, but when you ask some questions of the speakers at the end, and I'll mention this at the end, but it's a good thing to do this a couple of times, there is a microphone in the middle. Please go to the microphone and also please identify yourself. Now, one other little announcement here. We do have an optional activity that Diana Denman has developed for tomorrow, Sunday, which for those of you who don't know this lovely town, I think would be most interesting. At 9:45, there will be a pickup in private vehicles out here in the parking garage, and we'll go over to the Alamo. Now, the Alamo is opening about then, so we'll beat the big crowds. You know, if you go over at the wrong time of day, there's hordes of tourists and really some pretty bizarre people that you probably probably would prefer to miss, to be honest with you. And then at 10:45, we'll leave the Alamo. We'll go over to the Mission San Jose. Now, there are several Franciscan missions here in town. The Alamo is the most famous because it became a fort later, and then, of course, the famous Texas independence action took place there. The Mission San Jose is really in better preservation and is still a functioning church. And for those who are interested in that, there will be a mariachi mass at the Mission San Jose. Possibly see another one of the old Franciscan missions and then be back here by 1:15 or 1:30. So please make a note of that. You won't find it anywhere in your official program. We'll try to announce it a couple more times during the day, but it should be a very pleasant way to spend the morning. You know, it's an extremely interesting and almost coincidental fact that here we are in San Antonio. Seems appropriate in a town called San Antonio that we should talk about developments in Latin America. You know, we're surrounded by the old Franciscan missions and so forth, but it's coincidental in a couple of other ways. San Antonio, for those of you who are not from Texas, San Antonio is one of the few clear points on this kind of a wavering and uncertain line that marked the high water point of the old Spanish Empire. Spain dominated everything up through South America and in through Central America and Mexico, but when you got up here, the Spanish system, the Spanish paradigm, failed. There was a mission presidio system which worked further south. Mission presidio system was sort of like this. The Franciscans and the soldiers would go out and they would build a fort and a mission. And there would be some Spaniards or some Mexicans, depending on the time period, who would come with them, and they would establish a colony of sorts. And then the idea was to find the local Indians and to conquer them or persuade them one way or the other to come and work at the mission and to become Christians. And this worked in a lot of places, but it failed up here because up here, Spanish history kind of came back on itself. By the time the missions and presidios were established this far north, and there were a few colonies that did make it, but by the time that the missions and presidios were established this far north, the Indians that were being encountered by the Spaniards were not used to civilized structures at all. They were Comanches and Apaches. Furthermore, these Comanches and Apaches were now mounted on horses, which was a technological revolution far greater than the computer revolution has been for us. The Comanches, for example, were a berry-eating and root-grubbing, fairly lowly tribe of people who lived up in the Grand Teton area and froze in the winter and sort of ate in the summer. And when they acquired Spanish horses, which had been stolen, it's thought, from the Spanish settlements in New Mexico, they completely ditched the old way of life, which was actually a lousy way to live, you know. And they adopted horses and became horsemen the like of which you could only compare to, say, the Mongols. Extremely fierce, extremely effective, and not at all interested in coming and becoming Catholics and hoeing the gardens around the missions. In fact, what they preferred to do, they were even able to whip up on the Apaches, who were pretty fierce themselves and raided hundreds of miles down into Mexico. But what the Comanches preferred to do during a period of a long time when they dominated the central plains of the United States was to, they lived in a distributed way. There were wandering bands. There were never more than a few thousand of them, okay? But as the full moons would come in the spring and there was good grass across the plains, which people called the Comanche moons after a few years of being killed this way, the Comanches would come sweeping down across the plains. They would even come into San Antonio, and what they would do is they would kill everybody they could catch, steal all the horses, maybe burn a few structures, and then they would disappear back out into the vast sea of grass. And during their heyday, nobody, not Europeans, not Indians, nobody could beat them. It was finally another technological revolution that beat the Comanches and ultimately the Apaches, and that was the development of repeating weapons, six-shooters and repeating rifles and things. Back during the days of, single-shot weapons, a good Comanche warrior could let go a half a dozen or more, maybe a dozen arrows, at full speed and accurately on horseback while you were trying to reload. And, you know, that's very discouraging, and it knocked a lot of people down. But it took a long time for Spain and for the viceroy in Mexico to realize that this paradigm up here was failing. And when they finally did, and I'll wind up this little Texas history session in just a second, but it's interesting because we are talking about another paradigm shift in Latin America, or an apparent one anyway, as we shift from what Manuel described last night as, a mercantile system more towards free markets. So in this case, the paradigm, the mission presidio system failed. It took, a couple hundred years to figure out that it simply wasn't going to work. You were not going to have Comanche homemen out here going to Mass on Sunday. At that point, when Mexico started to withdraw a little bit, they didn't officially give up the territory, of course, but they invited, allowed, take it as you will, people from the British colonies, or the former British colonies, to move into this area, Stephen F. Austin and his crowd, which were probably intended to be a buffer between those Spanish ranches and haciendas that were actually functioning down along the border. And I know some people in Mexico City who are descended from the landowners on what's now the U.S. side of the Rio Grande. They were supposed to have been compensated, but they never were, by their country. There was a treaty which we were supposed to compensate our people for property lost on the other side, and Mexico was supposed to compensate theirs. And they have an association just in case anyone ever gets around to paying them for this land that was expropriated. But in any event, Stephen F. Austin and that crowd were probably seen as a buffer, so the Comanches would have somebody else to kill. And things didn't work out quite that way, and eventually, of course, the Alamo, once a mission, San Antonio de Valero, became a fortress, and then it fell into disrepair, and then it was taken over by the Texans at that famous holding action, which by itself would have been inconsequential, but which delayed long enough that the other forces of the Texans were able to marshal, and Texas independence was the final result. So here we are at this point where the Spanish Empire reached up to the north, and you can trace this dotted line over through New Mexico and some other places, but it was where that great Spanish paradigm finally failed. And here we are today with some very knowledgeable people to talk about another shift in paradigms in the old Spanish Empire, which may prove to be very beneficial not only to the people who live in those places, but also to all of us in this hemisphere. The people that we have with us today, it's really, as I say, quite unfair. I mean, their credentials came by parcel post. That was the only way you could carry anything that was quite that voluminous. The things that they have done are extremely significant. We'll start with Carlos Ball. Carlos is a Venezuelan, but he doesn't live there. He lives in Miami for very good reason. He had his problems with the previous president of Venezuela, who didn't like him very well, but the current president has not only offered to lock him up, but said on national television that he'd like to have him shot. And so Carlos is now living in Miami. Carlos was born in Caracas. He went to the Choate School in Boston University. For those of you who are Spanish speakers, I am not. I apologize for what I'm about to do to everything I say from here on. He is the editor and publisher at Agencia Interamericana de Prensa Económica, which is an economic and political news and syndication service for Spanish language newspapers, and he has subscribers everywhere from New York to Santiago. His columns are published in 15 countries. He has written for the Wall Street Journal since 1987. He has been published in English by the Providence Journal, the San Francisco Examiner, the Miami Herald, the Cato Journal, Reason, Liberty, American Enterprise. 1995 Honorable Mention H.L. Mencken Award, the Free Press Association. He is a fellow at Francisco Marroquin in Guatemala. And gracious, if I were to read the rest of Carlos's credentials, it would take up far too much of his time. I noticed that he also mentions right here on his vita that he is married to a woman who is unquestionably one of the loveliest in Latin America, Anita, who is sitting here in the front row. Our other speaker today, Roberto Salinas León, went to Hillsdale in Michigan, and then to Purdue. He is the executive director, and he has, by the way, a PhD from Purdue. He is the executive director, here I am butchering the English now, of the Centro, how do I say that?
De Investigaciones sobre la Libre Empresa.
Good. Everybody heard that, right? He is an adjunct professor of political economy in the law school of the National Autonomous University of Mexico City. Is that a correct translation? Good. A weekly columnist in El Economista, El Diario de Monterrey, The News, and Siglo 21. He has published more than 800 articles in English and Spanish on public policy topics in the Wall Street Journal, Morning News, Dallas Morning News, that is, or Morning Snooze, as we fondly speak of it in Dallas. The Washington Times, the Journal of Commerce, Miami Herald, the Diario de las Americas, El Mercurio, El Tiempo, and many others. He's also published numerous specialized essays and books and monographs on free trade, the environment, modernization and economic reform, monetary and exchange policy, and privatization. He is the author of a special Mexico Economic Report, which is published and distributed by the British Chamber of Commerce in Mexico. And he is the economic commentator in the morning news show on Radio Red, the Monitor de la Mañana, in Mexico City. He is also a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. And for those of you who are interested in several pages more of distinguished credentials, I will be more than happy to provide you with the list after the session. The first speaker will be Roberto Salinas León, and he's going to talk about the future of free trade in the Americas.